So on that note, before we get into what we're going to talk about, the other day I just had my YouTube music play, like just I had searched, I think, like worship music or something, and I was listening to it on the way to work, and then it got to this point where like this just music started playing, and then like 5 minutes into the ride, it was still going, and I'm like, hold on, this isn't. What is this? And then I pulled it up at a stoplight and I'm like, it said something about like praise sounds, or it was like it's something like they would play at Bethel. Like it was like piano synth in the back the whole time. And I'm like, what in the world? And then I had a really fun time where for the next 5 minutes, I was like, all right, everybody, like, do you feel the results? So I had my own little mock-up moment in, yeah, where I was like, the piano synth really brings the Holy Spirit, I can tell you. Like without it, is he even there?
They actually made an album called Synesthesia. Did you know that?
Bethel did?
Bethel did.
No, I didn't.
But that's the whole album. It's just instrumental.
If I was gonna have an album name, I wouldn't name it Synesthesia or something. It's just that sounds weird. Just in and of itself. I would call it like Sounds of the Spirit or something. I don't know. Something a little...
Yes.
Or The Blue Genie. Only some people will get that reference from Jim. Okay. So guys, so new format for the Babbling Pastor podcast. We're going to go through one topic a month. You guys are either seeing this a little clip of this or you're going to see like the whole thing eventually, but we're going to talk about stuff specifically directed sometimes at pastors and sometimes directed toward the congregation. But today is specifically for pastors. So this is very, not only is this a niche, it is a niche of a niche here that we're going to talk about. But one of the thing that you, well, you gave me a list, but I think this is a really good sort of topic to
This
talk about.
actually has broad application, though. I
That's
mean,
true, yeah.
this has application. We're specifically talking about pastoral ministry, but the application for this would even be helpful for you in your secular job, right? I
That's
mean,
true. That's a
I
very
mean,
valid point.
so.
Yeah, so it's intentionally prioritizing things that you're not gifted at, but you still need to do. This is going to be specifically the ministry stuff though. And I can only like so like I'm not obviously in full-time ministry. You are. But even thinking about that when I'm thinking about like preparing for a sermon or stuff, it's very easy for me just in that specific thing that I do to lean on what I'm super familiar with, what I'm really good at, and not go off a course on that. And I can only imagine, especially with, you know, as just a pastor with all the aspects there, it would be really easy to be like, well, I'm good at preaching, and I'm good at, you know, maybe greeting people, but this whole visiting the sick thing, I'm not real comfortable with, or this like leading a smaller group. So I'd be interested just to pick your brain on this. Obviously, you've been in the pastorate for what is it now? Two, 3 years?
Since I became full time at the most wonderful point in all of American history, April of 2020.
Nice. What better time
Yeah,
to
right.
where to get
Yeah,
in? So they're like, hey,
so
by the way, you're a pastor, you can't meet any of your people.
yeah, I still give the pastor that retired then, I still give him grief sometimes because he threw me into the deep end, absolutely, for sure. So, but then, God did that, so it is what it is. I can't get super mad, right? It worked out.
Yeah, it's a, hey, by the way, Rob, I'm gonna retire, and I know like what literally just happened is gonna make this more difficult, but I'm out. So see you later. So as that, right? So that's 2 years essentially, of what, you know, well, yeah, it has been 2 years. So within that 2 years, right, there's things that talk about maybe really quick what you were like, oh, I got this for sure. Like I don't gotta worry about this or this. And then maybe the part where you were like, oh, but crap. I got to do this other stuff too. And I'm not super comfortable with it.
Yeah, so I think probably the big one for me is I am This actually might surprise you even, because when we hung out a lot back in the day, like for those of you who don't know, we live in separate places in the nation. Like we're not having dinner tonight. And so when we hung out like back in the day, this was not true of me, but I have become very introverted.
Yeah, that's not the Rob of the childhood, no.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I've become really introverted, and to the point that like I could actually just sit here in this, see this chair behind me? That's my little reading corner, right? So I could just sit there and live there until I go home every
real
day.
Real quick, I do need to tell this story, because I tell people this story a lot. This is the Rob that literally would go around with a notebook and like do an autograph and rip it off and hand it to total strangers and say, this is going to be worth something someday.
Oh man. And what a disappointment for them that has been.
I'll still hold on the paper and be like, no, bro told me that this is going to be a famous basketball player and this is going to be worth it.
I'm going to step out in faith here and just keep this and pin it on my wall.
Yeah, my vision board. Yeah. Anyway, that was
yeah. So, I appreciate you bringing that up, because now every time I'm feeling bad about myself, I can go, you know what? I used to be a lot dumber. So, for me though, that complicates things, obviously, right? Like whenever I'm preaching, I feel that and others around me see that is really a gift. So that comes pretty naturally. And this kind of thing, you know, technology, this kind of thing is easy, comes easy for me. But Sunday, other than preaching, I kind of force myself to do the other stuff. And it's not out of just obligation, because that's the job description. It is out of a sincere love for the people here, right? So, and that's important, because you're, just because you struggle with something, doesn't mean that it, like in that situation, it doesn't mean that I don't want to, spend 45 minutes after church interacting and having conversation with people because I don't actually like them, right? It's just not comfortable for me. Like there are times, I'm sure, when a new person shows up and I have an awkward moment where I don't really know what else to ask to keep the conversation going, you know, like, and like, I know that that happens, right? And, but so for me, that's one thing. And I think you joked about visiting the sick. That's something that I've grown in some, but that's also not natural. Visiting, being with people, it is not natural, particularly if it's someone that I don't know super well, right? Like there are some people in our small groups now that have been a part of our small groups long enough that for me it's like easy peasy. It's just like having someone in my family around, right? So it doesn't take it out of me like some other things do, but if I'm just being really honest, like it takes it Sunday wears me out, and part of it isn't just preaching, and so that's probably the biggest thing that I could think of personally that I have to intend, because that's part of it. That's what the people long for. It's actually biblically part of the job description. It's what I should be doing, is being with the people. And I can point to lots of conversations that have been good and helpful for me and for others, because I'm kind of training myself or forcing myself into those situations. I just had one of those conversations the other day. We just baptized two people Sunday, and they came to our small group that evening. And the young lady, that's a married couple, the young lady comes up to me at the end of that and asks something that she'd been wondering about. She has siblings who ask her questions about the LGBTQ thing. And she knows what she believes, and she believes the right things, but she doesn't really know how to answer them and how to talk to them. So that isn't a super comfortable moment for me, right? But it's necessary, and it was helpful for her. And so that's just one example, but there are lots of them.
Yeah.
What, like that.
And I think a lot of, so just talking about like, so just by nature of not only the area I live in, but the things I do as far as online, I know a lot of different pastors. And what's really interesting is that everybody, where you're good at one area, there's usually not a deficiency, but like you really got to work through the other areas, right? So there's some pastors that I know that are like, they're like, what they would prefer to do is just have everybody over all the time. They're super hospitable. They love that aspect of it. The preaching part, they don't really like them, like, because they don't feel like it's relational. They feel like it's like one pastor was like, I'd rather just have small group all the time, because that there's a lot of feedback. There's a lot of back and forth, because I don't have to guess what people are thinking. And so like, it's just very interesting in that. And you did bring up, and I don't have the screen set up, so I can't do this, but if you guys want to, 1 Timothy chapter 3, we do have qualifications for overseers. So I think we should probably read this really quick. And it says this, the saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to be the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, a husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well, with dignity, with all dignity, and keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage the household of his own household, how will he care for the God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace or into the snare of the devil. And what's really interesting in that is, you have so many different things. So there's guys that I know that are like naturally, I don't know if naturally quarrelsome would necessarily be the right term, but like, they're not like, they're very like, in your face, sort of like if you say something, they're not intentionally trying to be like, they don't want to fight with you, but they just want to push back a lot. And so there's some guys that I know that have to like really be like, like, I've got to chill for a second. Like, and so I think as a pastor, and like you said, I think we can probably bring application into this a little later as we're talking for everybody. But as a pastor, it's one of those things where I think being, and this is where I would say, I'm not saying that like people that are younger out of college, for example, like right out of university, maybe right out of seminary. Like it's, I think it's that point in time where it's so important to have mentors in the faith, people older than you, people that have been through it a little bit longer. It's sort of the Titus 2 sort of concept, that are able to speak and be like, hey, these are the areas that you're really good at, and these are the areas that maybe you need to like push yourself out a little bit. Because most of the time, we're not like real apt to push ourselves in the areas that we don't think we're strong at, because one, we're probably insecure in them anyway, because we know we're not good at them. And two, we'd much rather focus on the things we're really good at. And so the gentleman that I talked to about the one that would rather have small groups than preach, like, he really has to push himself to say, okay, I need to sit down, I need to do this outline, I need to make sure. But one of the things that I really admire in that situation is that he takes what he's good at, like the small group sort of situation, and tries to meld that into the sermon. So that's the discussion we had. It was a matter of like, hey, you're really good at saying, okay, well, what are they probably thinking about? Or what are the questions, now that you've done this forever, that you know they're probably going to ask? And then you can sort of put that and make that part of your sermon. And so it has that feel, but obviously it's not quite that. Obviously, they're not going to, unless you're in a Quaker congregation, they're not giving you feedback during your sermon. It's that, what am I good at? What am I bad at? And how can I sort of mesh those together a little bit? And that's just one example. But I think for me, one of the things that was really nerve-wracking, but growth-producing was when somebody, her name's Sandy, she came up to me one Sunday and goes, hey, do you want to come and do some prison ministry with me? I need somebody there. She wasn't feeling super confident that she was communicating the scripture well enough, and she wanted somebody to come with her. And she's like, hey, if you could, you know, come with me every Tuesday, da 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 da. And that was, again, you guys only watch videos, so you don't really, you only know so much about me. That's nerve-wracking to me for a couple different reasons. One, I don't like the idea of being locked in a room for a very long time with people I don't know. Like, it's just not super comforting to me. Like, not like just sort of in a room, but literally locked in. Like, you're not getting out. It's a prison.
Yeah.
It's intentionally not easy to get out. And so that was like super nerve-wracking, but it was one of those situations where it was like, if I don't make myself do this, one, I probably don't know what I'm missing out on. And two, like, maybe this could be used for growth. And I mean, that has been such a transformational thing in my life of forcing yourself to do something you don't like, knowing that you can literally fall flat on your face, but saying, okay, well, where can I grow? Where can I adapt? What benefit can I get out of this? And I think that's super helpful. The same thing with the visiting people. I this is going to sound bad, but maybe it is bad. I don't know. I hate visiting people in hospitals. Just, it's that, I don't know what it is. It's just that feel of like, one, most of the time, I don't know you when I'm coming there. It's probably like, I have this feeling that this is just as strange for you as it is for me, because you can't get away. You're trapped in that bed, and me, some stranger that somebody you know has me coming to talk to you, is a little awkward for both of us. And so, again, forcing myself into situations like that, because again, it's like you said, part of the job, I don't think is maybe the right way to word it, but that is ministry. And even if you're not good at it, it's that part that you kind of have to force yourself to do, for the sake of the people that you're over.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some of that is in our head even, right? I'm similar. I think that I've grown in this area, but especially at first, man, when I would go and visit someone who's in the hospital, it's like, I think because I was new at it, I assumed that it was absolutely as awkward for them as it was for me. You know, like, listen, there's a part of me and there's a part of you in the back of your head that's like, you know, listen, I understand you don't want me here. I don't want to be here. Let's just do this because this is the way it's supposed to be. But in fact, though, that's not true. You know, and I think I had to, I had to get past that in my head, because there's a reason that the scriptures talk about visiting the sick, and how important that is. And it's because I mean, they're in a position in which they need encouragement. They need the scriptures. They need to be prayed over. And it truly is a service of ministry to love them in that way and in that time and place. And I think that I think I've never been more convinced of that than when my mother-in-law was passing away, and there was a lot of ministry that needed to happen among the family, which frankly could be even more awkward depending on the family, right?
Yeah.
But there was a lot of ministry that needed to take place. They were actually looking for solace and comfort, and they knew that they weren't going to find it by watching TV or something. Like at the end of the day, they needed to have the scriptures read. They needed to hear what is heaven going to be like? How do you know if you or she or they are Christian? They need that reassurance and comfort. And so, as awkward as that might be at first, I think that we have to get past that And perhaps if you're an older guy with more life experience, when you become a pastor, you've been through maybe both your parents have passed away and you've been through some things like that. Maybe you go into that already knowing, right? And so maybe that becomes not a thing in your ministry that's as difficult, right? But for me, there are, it's not even just visiting the hospital that's difficult for me. It would be visiting in general. Because you and I have grown up in an era in which you don't visit people.
Oh no. Yeah.
Right. Like you call and plan or text, frankly, you're right. Text and, you know, hook up. In fact, when people are like, "Hey, we should get together sometime," I'm like, "Cool. Have your wife call my wife because I don't know." And that's how it happens. And then magically my wife says, "Hey, so-and-so is coming over on this day," or whatever. Right. And it just magically appears and happens. but that's the era that we live in and that we've grown up in. But specifically for the elderly, they grew up with like pop-ins, you know, yeah. What I mean? And like, but you need to give me like a few hours to put together the fake house at least. Don't just show up at my door, right? Come on.
There's laundry right there. Like, the dogs are here. They smell the high heaven. You can't come in this house, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just visit on the porch. But we that's a cultural thing, right? That is just different between eras and generations. And so it's funny because it's necessary that for some of the people in my church, I call and schedule a time to visit with them or have them over or those kinds of things. And for other people in my church, it's like not expected. And I could just stop by for a little bit, you know?
Let's talk about that real quick. So I think that's really, that's a whole nother aspect to this. So when you're talking about as a pastor, you know, for example, you have a multi-generational congregation. Most churches are going to be that way. And so not only are you having to sort of weigh, hey, what are the things that I'm good at? What are the gifts that I have? What are the things I need to sort of lean into intentionally to grow on? While at the same, like that's hard enough. While at the same time saying, okay, well, how I approach those things vary with all of these different people. So with my older congregants, they just expect me to pop in. For sort of my, you know, my middle-aged congregants, they kind of want to plan it a little bit. If I'm trying to, you know, talk to maybe a teenager or like a young adult, like there's a whole nother aspect there where they don't even want to, like, they get anxiety even making eye contact. So now I have to like text them. Like, so there's this whole
the background panic attack.
Yeah, they look calm, but in their head, everything's exploding. So it's one of those things where, like, for all of these different people, not only are you trying to lean in and say, okay, I need to do these things, but I think as a pastor or somebody that interacts with a lot of different kinds of people, really knowing, hopefully this comes natural to some people where you can sort of read people really well and kind of get a, you know, okay, and sort of roll with those punches individually. So you kind of know, but if you don't do that, and this is something, again, this, I think this is where it applies sort of like outside of the pastor, just to certain jobs. I'm a salesman for my job. So there's lots of different people I interact with on a very daily basis. So I've had to learn and adapt, which is honestly sort of been a transferable thing into pastoring, but I've had to learn to adapt really quick on how somebody's feeling, sort of their personality, how to intro a conversation. And I think that's a whole, what you just mentioned, there's a whole different dynamic underneath this other thing, to where now maybe you're not real good at hospitality and you're trying to lean into that a little bit. But now you have to figure out how to lean into that and learn that well with all of these different generational cultural things all involved. And so really as a pastor, what you're trying to do, if you're trying to do it well, is like at the end of the day, I think it can be really easy to get home and be like, I just don't know. Like I give up. I don't know how to do this well, because what works for, you know, Ethel over here doesn't work for, you know, Jim, and you're just trying to figure out all it. So like, maybe, I don't know, I know I'm putting you on the spot here. Maybe speak to that a little bit. Like, how have you navigated that well, where you're like, man, like what works for them does not work over here. And now I'm having to kind of, I had to, in my head, make mental folders of how to do this in different situations with different people and love them all well.
Yeah. So a couple of things. First of all, that has to do, that dynamic is in everything that you do as a pastor, including preaching.
That's good.
I have to recognize, who is in the, who's in the room, who it is I'm speaking to. I mean, there are certainly scenarios in which you don't, if you're guest preaching or doing some sort of evangelism or conference or those kinds of things, of course, you're not going to know everyone that's there, you know, but, and so it's going to be more generalized, but I have the privilege of knowing these people. I'm going to be able to, or let me rephrase that, based on our conversation, right? I should and must, even in preaching, address that multi-generational, multicultural kind of, and I mean, we're in Dickinson, North Dakota, right? So this is oil field country. There are people from everywhere here. And people of many ethnicities, from many cultures, from a bunch of different states, from a whole lot of different denominational backgrounds, some not from any church background. That's all stuff that you have to think about and navigate the whole time. And the answer to the how is actually simple enough that it's probably going to be a letdown to everyone. And it really is just, you need to get to know them. you need to know these people. I've said from the pulpit a time or two, when I'm making application and, maybe giving comfort or those kinds of things, like, I know you, and I know that some of you are struggling with these things or those things and this stuff. And I know that, there are marriages in the room that are difficult. I know that there are moms in the room who feel like they're single moms because husband never shows up or comes or cares or whatever. Like, I'm able to say those things and interact with a lot of different people in the room, but you got to know them.
I'm sorry. I don't want to stop you mid-sentence.
But yeah, like, go ahead.
That is so important. I think that part right there. There are, especially I think, one of the focuses, and this may have changed since I've been in college, but one of the focuses I know when I was in college coming out, and just so everybody is aware, this has been nearly 20 years ago that I was in college, just short of that, probably 18, 19 years. And so there wasn't a lot, or at least a lot that I remember, of classes on like, hey, being a pastor is far more than knowing the right theology, being able to preach well, being able to organize a business, an organization, right? Like, those are the things they really, I remember them teaching a lot. Like, homiletics is important. Knowing the right theology is important. Being able to communicate, that's important. But one of the things that really isn't focused on a lot, and what they tried, at least at the time that I remember, they tried to sort of do that, was like, hey, go be an intern somewhere. That's not really super, I mean, that's, I guess, at least a start. But the idea is what you're talking about here, this relational aspect of it is so important. I mean, like I said, so I go around a lot of different places, talk to a lot of different people. There are people in each stop that I have, because they know I'm a believer, and we've talked about that all before, that like, all one, I have to be ready on my toes at any time, because I don't know when they're going to want to talk about certain things or what they're going to want to talk about. But secondly, I've got to know them well enough to know how to sort of enter that conversation. Like, what do you know about Christianity? What don't you know about Christianity? Like, where do you stand on certain things? And I think as a pastor, obviously that goes a whole nother layer deeper, where knowing what they're going through, and not, you're not just preaching to them. You're preaching into their situations. You're not just giving general ideas of, hey, this will probably work for you. But again, knowing how their marriages are going, know how their relationship with their kids are, knowing if someone's dealt with, you know, this depression or a situation, that knowing them helps you not only take advantages of your strengths as an individual, but know where maybe you do need to press in. Like, so for example, somebody we have over here, as far as like being sober-minded or being hospitable or being gentle, right? There's certain people, I'll bring up the guy that I talked about before, that he's not trying to argue with people. He just likes pushing back a lot because that's kind of how he processes things. He, when we've had conversations, has really had to work on the gentle part of being like just listening, just being able to listen to people and what they're going through and not automatically come back at them, because that's just his personality. And I think when you know people, right? So you probably have them too. There's people at our church, little old ladies, that just want to unload on you because they're widowers. They don't have a lot of people just to talk to, and they will talk your ear off forever if you let them, because they don't have anybody to talk to. And knowing as a pastor, you know, obviously there's boundaries and time settings and all of that, but knowing when to just be like, all right, go for it. I got 15 minutes. Just let them go for it. But you know when you're able to do that and that they need that because you know them. And I think that relational aspect is so neglected sometimes. Not to get off on a tangent here, but I've had to do some background research on Charles Stanley because of a video I'm doing on Andy Stanley. And, you know, people feel all different kinds of ways about Charles Stanley, apparently. But one of the things that keep coming up is that, like, he was very relational with people. And so through a lot of the situations, apparently, in his life that he was going through, that was very helpful in regards to sort of how he pastored, was knowing people, being very relational with them. And not only individually, again, I watched my first full Charles Stanley sermon like 2 weeks ago when I did a review on him. So it's not like I'm an expert. But all of the feedback I got was that a lot of people that have watched him forever, apparently like my grandma used to, was that you could feel that relational sort of bent that he had even when you didn't know him, even when it was coming through a television. And so I think as a pastor, that's such a key point, is that you have to know your people. Like, you can't just be like, I'm the pastor of whatever church. No, you're the pastor of these people. And do you know them? And can you speak into these situations? And really, the cool thing about this, and maybe you might be able to give a little bit more insight on this, but they're actually going to, maybe sometimes going to directly point out to you, but I think more in indirect ways, you're going to see sort of your strengths and weaknesses through them as far as how you interact with them, and then be able to sort of grow in them depending on kind of, again, the multiple varieties of people you interact with.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it might for the listener seem like we've gone off completely off topic, but we actually haven't, because the whole premise of the conversation has been about doing things intentionally that you're not good at naturally, or that you find difficult naturally. And we wouldn't, I think neither of us would be able to have the conversation go where it has gone up to right now without having forced ourselves into these positions to know the things that we're talking about. So here, another example, I think, of this relational thing and longing. So Proverbs 1:5 says, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. And the scriptures often talk about continuing to learn. That the scriptures are sufficient in that as well. It's something that we learn from the scriptures, is that lifelong learning is important. You see, through the gospels, the disciples develop as they walk with Christ. You see Peter forced to do something he's not comfortable with and going to Cornelius and his household, and which is I mean, it's anathema in their culture, right? To go and have conversation with these Gentiles and present the gospel to them and all this stuff. Now he went because the Lord told him to, but isn't that what we're talking about? Right. And so you actually see example of this in the scriptures. And I think in my own, this has only been on the table for the past couple of days. And so I'm not even sure if this is possible, but it's been in my head a little bit to see if, and talk to the seminary that I'm attending, to see if I could, tag on some extra classes at the end and fulfill not only my Master of Divinity, but also gain their Master of Arts in Theological Studies with an emphasis in counseling, biblical counseling. And that I think would serve me in multiple ways. One, it would help with this relational thing. It would help give me comfort and frankly more wisdom as to how to handle situations that come up that are difficult. And that right now I might be in a position where I have to prep for some meetings like this that are really difficult, and I have to think through them. And not that I will never not have to do that at some level, but, and I even think that counseling would help me, help grow my preaching. And that's even an error. So this is maybe a path to go down as well, honestly, with the whole conversation, because preaching, I think, is a gift for me. But there is no gift that cannot be improved upon, right? So there are aspects of my preaching that sometimes I feel like are lacking. I think it's fairly easy for me to preach to the head, and it's work for me to preach to the heart.
Let me be a Stephen Furtick audience member going, that's good. Yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah. But some intentional training in biblical counseling and from different perspectives and it will help me, I believe, grow in sympathy and help me, I believe, in preaching to the heart. As well. And so I think there's an expectation in the scriptures that we're going to continue to learn, or that we should continue to learn. It's part of us becoming more and more Christ-like in this life. And there's learning and growth that can happen in the areas that you already see as gifts for you. And really it's intentional. When you continue to learn things and grow and continue training. So that's just something that I've just recently started thinking about, and I don't even know if it's possible, but I think that it would be helpful. And there will at least be some electives probably that I take, even if that other degree path doesn't happen. But yeah. For that specifically, but
I think that's good. Well, and like, so I think that's good to tie in to this before we go down that path. So we're talking about the qualifications for elder a lot. There are, I don't know of anybody that has been ever presented as pastor that is like 100% on all of these. Like there's some people that obviously are like incredibly self-controlled, very respectable, maybe a little hospitable. They're pretty good at preaching. Like nobody comes in as like, man, this is the dude that knocks everything out of the park. Usually, obviously there's none that are disqualifying. That would obviously be an issue and a big red flag, but he's maybe not exactly great in all of these. And these are the things obviously that, you know, you don't have to be 100 in all of them, but they're identifiable at least in you that this is one of those things. And I think that's what sort of to tie into what you're saying there. Is that when somebody comes into the pastorate, maybe you're not great at hospitality, but you're willing to learn, or you're willing to sort of be like, you know, it sort of gives me an anxiety attack if somebody's going to come over all the time. But I know that it's like, it's a thing that needs to happen, and I'm willing to grow in it. And even I think what you said there, pairing that with saying like, I'm good at this, but I think I could be better at this, is something that I don't want to say I don't often seeing people, but sometimes I think the longer some people are in ministry, they just sort of settle into this, like, well, I'm just not going to be like, this is it. This is as good as it gets. And there's not
this
really.
This is me.
Yeah, this is me. This is my personality. And I, and so they're just like, well, this is what you're getting as regards to like preaching, or this is what you're getting in regards to counseling. And there are some, like, to give a little bit of grace here, I think there are some things that you can pivot to somebody that is incredibly gifted in that area and say they're going to do this better. But I think it should not, that shouldn't be a cop out for you not growing in an area. So maybe you're not the best. I mean, we'll go with counseling, right? So maybe you're not the best counselor, and you know, somebody over here is, and it's great to refer them. But if you recognize that, like you just said, if you recognize that, why not try to get better? Not to outdo this person that you already send people to, but to say like, well, this is obviously an area that I'm not real good at. And because I'm not really good at it, maybe I could get at least better at it. Maybe so I don't have to shove everybody this direction and only some people that direction. That's the same thing with, I mean, even in preaching, like you're talking about, there's two things that you said, or one thing that you said there that I think was really important, and that I want to tack on something, is that so often our preaching comes from our personality. And so it's really, sometimes it's really easy to get in a flow because we think of things in a certain way, and then we process and preach it that way, and we miss a good portion of the congregation because they don't do it that way. I'm very, very similar to what you said. Like, I'm very much like, here's the information, here it is, understandably, boo, now apply it. But there's people out there that are much more like, I'm not by nature, and this is something I have to force myself into a lot. And luckily I have a wife and a daughter that are opposite me at this. So I'm like, oftentimes have to process through it a lot more than I would normally if I was just some single dude somewhere. But like, I'm not naturally empathetic. I'm just not. I'm like, here's the facts. Do that. Yep. I don't know why it's a problem for you. And so, because that's how I process things. And so what's helpful is that, you know, to remember that, like, when I'm preaching, that's great for maybe half of the congregation. But the people that are much more empathetic or like need things communicated in certain ways, I'm missing them. And so to grow in that a little bit, I think like what you said about preaching to the head versus the heart thing is, when we understand that, like, even if we're really good, and this is where I think sometimes when we know we're lacking in something, those are things that are really easy to grow in, because we're like, we're going to have to force ourselves to do that. We know we're not good at it. But in the case of something we're really good at, we don't, like, oftentimes we don't want to get better at it because we're already good at it. We're scared to try new things. I remember I can preach from the New Testament fairly easily. Preaching from the Old Testament, like the Psalms or the Proverbs, is like something I had to force myself to do. I wasn't super comfortable with it because, again, Proverbs or wisdom literature, Psalms aren't like didactically out like a New Testament epistle would be. And so those things were a little bit more difficult. And so forcing yourself into it and being like, I might really fail at this, but doing it in such a way for the benefit of obviously your growth, but so that you can connect to those other people in the congregation as well. Anybody that watches the sermon reviews know I'm not a huge fan of illustrations, but I understand that they are beneficial for some people as long as they're kept, I think, within parameters that are reasonable. But that's one of the things too, is that there's some people that need those. There's some people out in the congregation that need that to be communicated a certain way. And so saying like, I'm really good at this, but I could grow at it, I think is something that a lot of people don't push themselves at because they're already good at X, Y, or Z. So why even try to get better at it? But when we realize, especially as pastors, like, there's some people that I'm missing out here because I am just talking to the head and not the heart.
Yeah.
And being able to communicate that, I think that's a great insight that you brought up there.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it tends to just be, it's not as though I think, we do that, intentionally overlook necessarily, because I think it's just a blind spot, because we figure, yeah, I'm God's gifted me here, I need to focus on this, right? And while that's not wrong, it's not necessarily complete. this is a topic I think that that has a lot to help us with, honestly. And I think one of the things that you run into at times is a church that has the budget to have multiple pastors. So, and I'll use me as an illustration. If we were to hire someone, it may be tempting to pick someone to do the things that I'm not good at, so I won't have to. You know what I mean? Like that might be a real situation. And
that's
in fact,
why there are specifically teaching pastors. Like that is your job.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And teaching pastors, pastors of visitation. I mean, some people that they thrive off that. It really lifts them up. They're encouraged by those visits, and they live off of it. But don't ask me to preach all the time, right? And for those guys, they would fit into that pastor of visitation kind of thing. Now, I'm not going to say that it's bad to do those things as a church. But it is something that we should, I think, proceed with intentionality and caution even, so that this guy is still learning to preach the word, and this guy is still learning to visit and be relational and know the people. You can't find yourself in a position where you're hiring somebody to do the thing that is just as much elder ministry, and it's just not elder ministry that you're super good at. There are elders who aren't paid staff at our church who are more gifted than me at certain things, and it's not wrong of me to. So, as a for instance, there are a couple of elders specifically that have been married for like 150 years, right? And they have solid Christian marriages. It would not be wrong of me to point a couple toward them to do some mentoring or that kind of thing. It would be wrong of me to do that if I did that so I wouldn't have to deal with it, or because my marriage is kind of rocky and I don't want to deal with that, so go talk to them. Like, so you can do that in a sinful way or in a way that's not helpful. And yet you can, God has also gifted people differently on purpose, as that's the way he does everything on purpose. Right. So he's blessed Irv and Marty with a wonderful marriage for a lot of years. They just celebrated their 50th a couple weeks ago, and it's been a blessing to have them, and him as an elder, and so if I have people who are trying to wade through financial ruin or anything like that, that they have brought upon themselves or whatever, I'm going to be able to offer them some biblical principles and stuff, but Irv is going to be able to offer them lots of experience and lots of wisdom that I just don't have yet. And the same way with marital things, you know, like I can talk about Donna and I can talk about biblical principles, but if you want somebody who's been married for 50 years and who really loves one another and who I think is a good picture for the body to look at, I can give you his number or call him and set up a meet or whatever. And so it's not bad to utilize those things, but it is bad for me to do it so I don't have to grow. Yeah. because I don't want to grow.
Well, I think what was the distinguishing thing that's really coming out with what you just said, I think, is the difference between a corporate mentality and a difference between a Titus 2 mentality. Is that so? Oh, Titus 2 is all about making sure that you're passing down this information, that you're growing. There's this whole waterfall of generational growth and knowledge being passed down along the way naturally in the church, and how discipleship and mentorship happens, versus a corporate mentality, which is very much what you described at the beginning. Like, I'm not good at this, you are. I'm hiring you to do this very specific thing. And like you said, that's not necessarily wrong, but if the intention is I don't have to grow because you're here doing the thing versus, hey, you are uniquely gifted and have a background that nobody else has, and you can deliver, you know, some really good resources and knowledge to the body versus I don't want to deal with this, so you just do it. And I think that's the difference between the corporate mentality and really what the church is supposed to be doing. And whenever you have churches that get a little too corporatized, I think that becomes, that's where you have a teaching pastor that literally doesn't know his people because the communications pastor does all that, or the small groups pastor is the one that covers all that. And you don't ever see the teaching pastor except on a screen sometimes or whatever. That's all. The only interaction you have is he's on a stage somewhere and I never really talk to him or see him. But I know like Jim over here, but Jim's never on the stage. And so I think that's where, again, when you're talking about qualifications for overseers and elders, like all of these things are important for that elder to have. He's not going to be great at all of them. He's not going to be a rock star at all of them. Obviously, this is the whole why you have multiple elders, or why that's really important, is so that your gift set can be utilized well for the body, but you're still growing in that versus you're just so like just cubed into this is your thing. Don't worry about anything else. And that's where I think like the body starts falling apart, because you're not you're just here. Don't worry about doing anything else. Whereas a very Titus 2 mentality is like so broad in the sense of like, so Paul's thing to Titus is have older men teach younger men self-control. And you're like, one thing is like, well, that one thing kind of covers everything. So like have that really go through the whole body of like all of this, like you said, this knowledge that this person's accumulated, not only in 50 years of marriage, but however long he's been alive, is going to be able to speak into you and give you knowledge so that later on, one, if you come across those, you already have some sort of framework, some sort of guidance to work with that situation, but also the people that come behind you are benefiting not only from your knowledge of the situation, but his knowledge of the situation. And this is where I think like all of this kind of, again, I do seem totally off from the initial topic, but as a pastor, leaning into some of the things you're not good at by sort of leaning on some people that are good at those is really, I think, big picture. What you see here is that isn't just helping you as a pastor. That's helping the entire congregation, because you've intentionally leaned into things you're not good at so that you can get good at them. And you've learned that from people that are good at them for the benefit of the entire body. And I think that's where, like you said at the beginning, this sort of goes outside of just the pastor. This could apply to everyone, whether they're in the body or in their corporate job or in their day-to-day, even family life. And this is what I said before. I'm not naturally empathetic, but I've learned how to be more empathetic from my wife and having to deal with, you know, my kids that have totally different personalities than I do. And so you learn that for the benefit of the people around you. And I think that's, again, where it's more of a general application. But as a pastor, purposefully leaning into and intentionally leaning into the things you're not good at by learning from the people that are helps everybody at the end of the day, instead of just pegging yourself into one and trying to hire everybody else for all the other stuff.
Yeah. And I think another thing that is that's necessary, well, I guess two things that go hand in hand, really, is in recognizing that I'm not good at this or that, or there's an embarrassing amount of room for growth in this thing or that thing. I think by nature of the gospel that unites us, we have to learn to show ourselves grace in those things as well. And not destroy yourself for 2 weeks mentally and spiritually and emotionally. Because you failed to do this or to act on that the way that you wanted to, or this counseling session, you should have done this differently. Or, I mean, there are any number of things that might fit with what you're preaching, if that's not your gift, right? And you can, frankly, if it is your gift and you bomb, or you go up there and you say some things that it just doesn't click with anyone. And afterward, you're like, well, no wonder it didn't click with anyone. That was stupid. You know,
what pastor hasn't like, had Monday morning where they're like, well, I'm done. I quit. Never doing that again.
I know of none, actually. but I think it's really important to show yourself grace in that if your heart is truly in being intentional about growing in those areas, and you truly are attempting it, and you truly are studying and training as best you can from the Word first and foremost, but even from other, you know, I mentioned Irv and Marty earlier because they're people that I watch to grow in some areas. And so but you have to be willing to show yourself grace. And if you're like me and Sunday really wears you out, but just because of the overstimulated amount of relational things, then it's also necessary to plan time to come down from that, you know, and maybe spend some intentional and extra time in the Word and in prayer and just with the, so I come in here, you see the light behind me. That's one of three lights that I have in here. And sometimes I come in here and shut the door and lock it and turn my lights out and turn a couple of these other lights on. And I just sit in here pretty much in the dark and do my devotions and just try to have time with God that is not about this job, that is just about me and God. And if I didn't do that, this would just be a job. It would just be something that I force myself to do on a weekly basis. Because I know that there are things that I need to do in this role to be an effective minister to these people that I'm not good at or that I'm not natural at. And it wears on you. It wears you out. And so if there's no rejuvenating, from your own private life, your own time with God, then I mean, it's no wonder you might run head first into burnout as a pastor or have to switch churches every 4 years because it's just too much and you need something new and they need something new because they recognize that, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's no longevity in that.
No, I think this is perfect to sort of kind of start closing out this podcast with, or this sort of topic on. Because those two things that you said, I think, are incredibly helpful. One, showing yourself grace is amazing. And having people around you that are able to tell you that when you don't want to hear it. There was a sermon I preached, it was two sermons ago. And it was terrible. I thought it was absolutely trash. And my pastor texted me and he was like, hey, great job. And I texted back and I was like, no, it was terrible. It was absolutely the worst sermon ever. I said, I don't think I got any of like the points across that I wanted to. And what he said was really helpful. He goes like, even if it was as bad as you think it is, somebody got something from that you don't even know. And so one, it wasn't as bad as you think it is, but even if it was as bad as you thought it was, God's going to use even that to do what he needs to do. And so I think one, it was nice that he kind of dueled that a little bit where it was like, it wasn't, but even if it was, it's still not the end of the world. Learn from it and get better from it and do better next time. And I think sometimes we really need to remind ourselves of that. Like one, like you said, we're probably in our heads making it way worse than it was. That counseling session was not a dumpster fire like you thought it was. That sermon wasn't as terrible as you thought it was. But even if it was that bad, show yourself some grace, learn from it, don't dwell in it, and just do better. What was terrible? Fine. Fix that for next time. Learn from the thing that you think was so bad and do it different next time. Learn from it. Don't dwell in it and just completely bury yourself in depression on it because you can't change it. There's nothing you can do to go back in time to change it. So just do better next time on it. And secondly, I think that ties into what you said on that burnout piece. Not only, I think, obviously, there's a huge issue with pastors and burnout. I think primarily because a lot of pastors don't do what you just talked about and say, like, I just need my Bible time. Like, that doesn't have anything to do with sermon prep, doesn't have anything to do with prepping for a counseling session, doesn't have anything to do with prepping for this thing that a verse somebody needs to hear about and I need to study on it. Just me reading the Bible, like that, being in prayer just for you. And I think that part is where, if you don't do that, it can become a, I checked the boxes for this week, I've done the thing I had to do, I'm going to go home and I'm just going to shut my brain off because that's all I have left. And I think for pastors, obviously, that's a huge issue. But secondly, I think for Christians, sometimes that can be a thing too, to where it becomes a, I have to do this and not I get to do this or I want to do this. And so for pastors, I think one, it can lead to burnout and a whole, again, if a pastor burns out, that affects the whole church. But even for believers, yep. if it's an issue where you're just like, I have to do this, so I'm doing this, I think obviously that can lead to somebody, all sorts of things, sometimes at the worst case scenario, them just leaving the church altogether because they're like, this is just all about doing this thing and I don't want to do this thing anymore. And even in those situations, I think obviously those people need to hear, maybe from their pastor, maybe from people in their small groups, like, show yourself some grace. Like, this is not like Jesus mm-hmm. loves you. He saved you, not because you do all of this, but because he wanted to. And so knowing that, and then hopefully this is the last thing I have to say before we sort of close it out. I think intentionally building in, and I cannot brag on, Nia is her name, she leads our children's ministry, enough, because she has intentionally built into Sunday morning the children's ministry to where every week it's a rotating list of people. So you're not doing it every single week. You have 1 week of the month. Sometimes you can actually rotate out to where you're not there for a whole month and then you rotate back in. But the point is, you're part of the body. You're hearing the sermons. You're not having, like, you're not missing every single Sunday because you're having to do this children's church thing. It's intentionally built to give people that breathing space. And as best as she can, she tries to give you like the sort of the bones of the lesson and then lets you sort of build the meat out of it so that you're not even stressed about what you're going to teach about. She has the bare bones of it. And then you kind of get to use your personality about being creative about the, you know, what the craft is going to be, kind of what are we going to dig into a little bit more specifically. And that helps, I think, with burnout too. My pastor specifically, you know, anybody wants to know why I preach once a month, it's not because I'm like great at it. It's because he's like, I think you have a little gift of it, but I just need a minute. I just need a minute. I don't, like, he has so much stuff that he does that he's like, I need a break. And mm-hmm. I feel comfortable enough with you doing that so I can focus on some other task that week that I'm not able to on the other weeks. So I think building that in and knowing that about yourself is incredibly helpful. So that's a lot, but that's sort of the last of what I have there.
Yeah. And I think it's important. And something that you said kind of makes me cringe and chuckle at the same time, because you're right. And it was when you were about the struggle that a lot of pastors really are missing that time in prayer and in the Word, which is the very exact reason in Acts that the deacons became a thing. Because there was an issue, a ministry issue, and it says, so the 12 summoned the congregation of the disciples and said, it is not pleasing to God for us to neglect the word of God in order to serve tables. Therefore, brothers, select from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we may put in charge of this need, but we will devote ourselves to prayer and to the service of the word. That is actually the primary job of the elder and pastor office. It even more than the visiting, even more than just the relational stuff. The scripture seems to make clear there that if we're fumbling the ball on this one, we're fumbling the ball on eldership in general. I would even say there probably are lots of false teachers who would agree that your sermons, your teaching, preaching ministry, even the teaching that you do inevitably when you're counseling or Bible study things or whatever, all of that is an outflow. It's an overflow of your own personal time with God and how you're growing in the knowledge of the word. Your prayer time affects all of these things. And so if you're not devoted personally to prayer and to the word, then your ministry in general is going to be not what God intended for the ministry to be. And so, that would be, and maybe that's a good way to end it because like at the end of the day, that's where you start any of these things, because the scriptures are a mirror, right? For us to look into, to see the gospel, to be reassured of our faith, to help us make our calling and election sure as Christians, but also so that we can see pretty clearly the flaws and the dings that need to be worked out of the body, right, of ourselves. And if you're not personally in the Word, personally growing, personally walking through a Bible reading plan or whatever your thing is, and personally taking time to pray, and not just checking a box off, but actually engaging with God, then of course all this other stuff is going to be cumbersome and difficult.
Yeah, no, I think that is a great place to end. If a pastor can get so far on their personality and their own set of giftedness, but that's never going to be far enough in regards to the congregation. You're going to have to rely on the Lord, again, like you said, in prayer. And they've got to know you're a praying pastor in the word, and they got to know you're in the word, because again, ultimately it's not about your charisma or your personality or what you can do. It's inevitably about what God is going to do through you and how you utilize those gifts. So I think that's great, guys. Hopefully that was helpful to you. If it was, make sure you leave a like, make sure you share it with a pastor that maybe needs some encouragement. Or if you're a new pastor, hopefully you did find that encouraging and helpful. And if so, again, make sure you like, share all that cool stuff. Leave a comment below, and we'll talk to you next time, won't we, Rob? We'll see you next month.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next time, and you'll just be forced once again to listen to us next time. Hey, that's the Babbling Pastors Podcast.
We'll see you later. Bye.